Does America really still stand for anything? In our bicentennial year, we're going to hear a lot about the United States of America, our history, our national heroes, our pride, our past. But what about the future of the United States as we suffer an identity crisis, a crisis of the spirit which is tearing America apart? We today are facing a crisis bigger than any since 1776. Trying to get a handle on where we are in the world is a little difficult today, especially when you look at the incredible building of an empire to become the biggest colonial empire the world has ever seen on the part of the USSR, while the United States and the other Western powers, having dismantled colonialism and the colonial empires that still had toeholds in Africa and other portions of the world, being driven out to be replaced, usually, by the Soviet Union. While most of us are asleep at the switch, seemingly not realizing it, there is a global war that is already underway. Not just the Cold War. This is the war between the have-nots and those who have. The war between the emerging third world powers, represented largely by the Afro-Asian bloc in the United Nations, and those such as the Western democracies, and principally that of the tremendous wealthy power that is the United States of America. Whether we know it or not, there has been a trend of emerging despotism, totalitarianism, military dictatorships around this world, and the United States seems absolutely helpless or apparently unwilling because of what is happening in Angola and what has happened in the past, which we will take a look at in a moment, to be able to stop it. It's about time we began to realize exactly where we are. We've heard about the pollution problem, about the food versus population curve. We've done many programs on that. About the biggest single problem confronting all of humankind today, which is the population explosion of this earth, which means regardless as to race, color, creed, religion, language, what flag we salute or what religion we have or anything of the kind, it still literally imperils the salvation or the future, the survival of the human race. But little do we seem to realize that today there is a far different kind of a struggle going on. That of the desire of so many little countries, the have-nots, for a piece of the cake. They want part of what we've got, or all of it. It's time now that the United States ask exactly what are we, who are we, what should we be, and where are we going? We seem to be having, like maybe many a person in their 40s or 50s, whose jobs begin to erode, or positions get changed, or perhaps corporate executive positions begin to be altered, and they have an identity crisis. They begin to wonder where they belong in the world and where they should go. They worry about security and about their future. They worry about money and about material goods. For many people, that is such an overwhelming trauma, they simply never recover. Well, the United States of America has been going through a trauma, one that the European peoples are very well aware of, and one we had finally better weather through and come out of and put behind us once and for all. I want to tell you about a Daily Telegraph article which appeared in an editorial in one of the leading newspapers in London, which is a national newspaper in England recently, entitled, "Is America Going Mad?" It is time America's friends spoke out with some nasty questions to the so-called liberal East Coast establishment. By that we mean sections of the press, sections of Congress, television commentaries and comedians, university pundits, and a lot of other people who may think there is a dollar to be made out of denigrating the country's institutions and leaders. We all know about the trauma of Vietnam and Watergate, but it's getting to be a bit boring, said this editorial. How long has the rest of the free world got to put up with these tender-minded people recovering from their trauma? Indefinitely? America is accustomed to and has merited a good deal of deference from her allies. But deference can be a disservice. The United States should know that her European cousins and allies are appalled and disgusted by the present open disarray of her public life. The self-criticism and self-destructive tendencies are running mad with no countervailing force in sight. She has no foreign policy anymore because Congress will not allow it. Her intelligence arm, the CIA, is being gutted and rendered inoperative, the names of its staff being published so that they can be murdered. Her president and secretary of state are being hounded, not for what they do, but simply because they are the people there to be pulled down for the fun of it. We hope and believe that the vicious antics of the liberal East Coast establishment, which are doing all this untold harm, do not reflect the feelings of the mass of the country. But it's a matter for wonder. Is the country as a whole becoming deranged, asks the Daily Telegraph. Surely not. Perhaps the presidential elections later this year will clear the air. Yet that is still many months away. And in the meantime, there is all the campaigning to be gone through. Please, America, they closed, for God's sake, pull yourself together. They asked the question, is America going mad? You know, you look around at what is happening in this country today, you honestly begin to wonder. We do not have the pride in our power anymore to be able to fulfill the role of virtual empire which was forced upon us at the end of World War II. Let's go back and take a look at what happened after World War II when we ended up for the moment holding all the marbles. People in Europe, people in the Middle East in particular, knew we could have stopped the Soviet Union right then and there had we possessed the will, the resolve, the strength of character, perhaps, the determination to do so. We did not. And the Cold War dawned, the Berlin Wall, the partitioning of Europe, the corridors, all the problems of the stopping of convoys, the Berlin airlift, we all know now it's a matter of past history. Then came Korea very shortly. And a strange thing that occurred in a meeting between former President Harry Truman, the late former President Harry Truman, and Douglas MacArthur, prior to his being relieved when he was the Allied Supreme Commander, I guess was his title, over the UN forces in the area there of Korea. There was a meeting on Wake Island, during which time Harry Truman asked Doug MacArthur whether or not he felt the communist Chinese would intervene from Manchuria. MacArthur said, absolutely not. Harry Truman had in his mind, as you look back in retrospect at what both of them said, that he could never allow the use of even tactical nuclear weapons as an arm of American foreign policy, that he would never allow the use of nuclear weapons or the threat of the use of nuclear weapons to deter communist Chinese intervention across the 38th parallel or across the Yalu River and into North Korea. MacArthur had in his mind, though it was never spoken to Harry Truman, that he would use tactical, that's limited, nuclear weapons. We already had developed the Long Tom cannon. There were smaller actual artillery shells, which could be nuclear tipped, which could have been used. And of course, MacArthur had in mind the bombing of bases in Manchuria and even in China, if necessary, to stop the invasion of South Korea. Well, the two men both assumed something that was not in the minds of the other. Actually, by the time that conversation was going on, there were tens of thousands of communist Chinese soldiers who had already infiltrated into North Korea. Well, the story of North Korea is already well known. It very deeply debilitated the United States of America. We did not win in Korea, we lost. It was a long, traumatic battle during which some of the bloodiest of all, Bunker Hill, Bloody Ridge, Pork Chop Hill, and all the rest of them, occurred during the time that peace talks were going on in Panmunjom. We had been warned never to get into any kind of a land involvement in Southeast Asia, the periphery of Southeast Asia, or the landmass of Asia, by such noteworthy generals as Stilwell and others who knew, who had fought there, who had been in Burma. So along came the bizarre repetition of Vietnam. If Korea had hurt and wounded the United States, Vietnam almost killed us. It was our longest war, our most costly war, and it did more to us to break the pride of our power than any other single event in the entire history of the United States to the present day, so far as I can tell. There's a rather obscure scripture in the Bible a lot of people aren't aware of that has to do with the recognition or the identity of where we are in Bible prophecy, of where we are identified. After all, the Bible mentions such tiny countries as Libya, Ethiopia, Egypt, the nation of Israel, so many others. But what about those lost 10 tribes? Time and again we've mentioned on the radio program that booklet called The United States and British Commonwealth in Prophecy that actually shows where we in the United States and the big powerful Western democracies of Europe, as well as Britain and the Commonwealth, Australia, South Africa, Canada, are identified in the pages of the Bible. There's a strange scripture back in the book of Leviticus that talks about national punishments coming upon those people who would possess the sea gates of their enemies, who would be the people who would have the most strategic and bounteous, wonderful natural resources, raw materials, energy sources, and so on of all of the earth. We are those people. It told about national moral sicknesses, of refusing to obey the Ten Commandments of God as a way of life. It talked about national sins and immoralities, and it said, if you will not obey the voice of the Eternal, your God, I will do thus and such. One of the threats, if you wish to call it that, of what would happen to such a nation, breaking the laws of God, would be the breaking of the pride of our power. It said nothing about taking away the power. It said, I will break the pride of your power.
The mighty Roman Empire had everything. Plenty of leisure time. Their own new morality. Enormous military might. The religion of their choice. Political freedom. What went wrong? Read The Modern Romans, a 93-page lesson of history ignored. For your free copy of The Modern Romans, dial direct 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. The Modern Romans asks, can we afford the grandeur of Rome?
If you'd like for this booklet, or better yet, you can dial right now to the toll-free number 800-423-4444. The operators are waiting to take your call. We'll have this very graphically illustrated booklet on its way in the mail to you immediately. If you live in California, Alaska, or Hawaii, the number to call is area 213. The number is 577-5225. I hope you'll write for it. We'd like to send it to you. When you look in the past, the recent past of the United States, as to why the pride of our power has been broken, and why we do not have the resolve to stand up to the Soviet Union as it continues in its empire building and its absolute colonialism of the entirety of the world, shoving its pawns to the fore, while not a single Russian soldier has had to die in the cause of expanding a gigantic global empire, which is becoming far closer to a fait accompli. You have to go back in the recent past, including World War II in Korea, and coming forward to what happened in Vietnam. Korea, as I said, weakened the spirit of the United States. Vietnam virtually destroyed it. When you look at the bizarre parallels between the two, that we fought a war along an imaginary line drawn on a map, which recognized no defensible or strategic areas such as confluences of rivers or mountain ridges or valleys or strategic ports or anything of the kind. When you realize that they both were limited wars fought for limited objectives with limited contributions of troops, piecemeal. When you realize it was the kind of a war that the United States was never familiar with, that American troops simply could not cope with, something that we had totally, through our own way of looking at the military, that we had totally rejected before we even got into it. The troops, by the tens of thousands who complained of fighting a war with one hand tied behind their back, were not the stuff of legions. America found itself thrust into a position of empire. But empires are maintained with legions. And we have never maintained legions, that is, mercenaries who are paid to die, who fight at the behest of the government which sends them out to the four quarters of the earth. The American young boys who fought, fought well when they were backed by air superiority and a sufficient kind of armor. They were great improvisationists. They could make do. They could find that Yankee ingenuity would oftentimes win a victory when the discipline of a very tough enemy might have been superior in some ways, at least in the rigors and the hardships that we learned could be undergone by not only the North Koreans and the Communist Chinese in Korea, but by the Viet Cong in their rice paddies and jungles in that 10-year agony that was Vietnam. So there is no question about the fighting spirit of the American when he knows that there is a just cause. If he is fighting to bring an end to some despotism, to make the world safe for democracy, to preserve the freedom-loving Western countries and to fight for liberty and for personal freedom and for mom and a girlfriend back home, he can be a deadly fighting man. When you commit Americans piecemeal for limited objectives to lean on an enemy, to bring him to a conference table, to end up with the same lines of demarcation you had when the war began, then Americans just simply don't know how to fight that kind of a war. Now look what has happened since Vietnam. We've had Watergate and the agony of all of the trauma of suspicion and resentment toward government. We have a man who is at the helm of government in the White House who is not the clear choice of the American people. A Congress which seems determined to wage nothing but an endless feud with the man instead of backing him and supporting him and helping him. And so we have a deadlock or a stalemate. We have the mood of America of tearing ourselves apart internally for fear of involvement abroad, and even that grows out of a combination of what has happened in the global march of the Soviet Union, such as that which occurred in Chile, where we have overtones of CIA interference, that which has happened in many another country in the periphery of Southeast Asia and in Africa and elsewhere, where again a suspected CIA involvement has been present. And so today we have launched ourselves in an orgy of self-righteousness, of washing our linen and our laundry and hanging it out the window for the entirety of the world to see, because we are so busy moralizing about the United States not having any spies. Why, we don't want to be the kind of people who would have spies. We want to prove to the world that we don't have any spies, or if we do, we publish their names and give their addresses, maybe pictures of them in the newspapers, so the guy can wait there with a machine gun to greet them when they come home from a diplomatic meeting of some kind. There are publications right now that seem to be devoted to the business of publishing the names and addresses of known CIA agents abroad. And because of certain sensationalism in the press, it has now become, it seems, the business of the American public to insist that we do not have such a thing as undercover agents in other countries. Oh, now we know the Soviet Union is not going to play the game that way. We don't really expect that other Eastern European countries, or even Western ones, including some of our own allies, are going to play that game that way. Or that the communist Chinese are in Africa, or in this country for that matter. We know that all other nations are going to have their spies, their saboteurs, their espionage agents. We know that they are going to concoct plots for assassination attempts, and we have suspected that perhaps they did in the case of the Kennedys, or perhaps Martin Luther King, and or others. But instead of suspecting other nations, we have even turned around to suspect our own, including the FBI and the CIA. That reminds me of what was said recently in Brussels, Belgium, by Winston Churchill. That's right, Winston Churchill, this the grandson of the former Prime Minister of England. Recently, he accused the United States of indulging in what he calls the endless circus of the bicentennial and a grotesque orgy of self-criticism while the Soviets penetrate Africa and the Middle East. He said detente is a disaster and just another word for appeasement. He's a Conservative Party member of Britain's Parliament and grandson of the wartime Prime Minister of Britain, and he said, and I quote, "Sinister totalitarian forces are on the march, yet the democracies of the West go wantonly on their way toward a cataclysm, while their politicians are more concerned with economic problems, unemployment, and party bickering, and our peoples are diverted by endless circuses such as the American Bicentennial this year." That in a speech in Brussels. He said the Great Republic, meaning the United States, is celebrating its 200th anniversary by indulging in a grotesque orgy of self-denigration and party political mudslinging. He said the legislators on Capitol Hill are washing their dirty laundry in the Potomac while the interests of Western democracy go by default. These men, he said, operating from a variety of motives, actively help the Soviet Union's imperial designs by cutting off such meager assistance as President Ford and Dr. Kissinger have been able to get to pro-Western UNITA and FNLA forces in Angola. And so he says Russia has won a clear victory in Lebanon when the Soviet-backed, Syrian-controlled Palestinian Liberation Army invaded that country and virtually made it a protectorate. The Soviet Union is trying to make a colony of Angola. from which it can disrupt the free flow of goods, of food, oil, and other vital raw materials around the Cape, without which the United States would suffer severe economic strangulation or disruption, and the nations of Europe, complete economic strangulation. He said the United States must make clear to Moscow that any continuation of these policies must inevitably invalidate arrangements already entered into for the supply of grain, technology, and capital to the Soviet Union. If you think for one instant Congress would vote that way, we are both crazy. The American farmers can tell you stories. We have repeated those stories. We've done programs on agriculture right here on this program to show you why the broad majority of the American farmers and, of course, the Agriculture Department would insist on being able to continue to sell wheat to the Soviet Union. No deal like that is going to be made. Yet it must be made if we are to stop the encroachment of the Soviet Union throughout Africa and around the world. The Soviet Union, under the cloak of contempt toward expansionism, contempt toward colonial empires and colonialism, is itself building a gigantic worldwide colonial empire and using the pawns of have-not impoverished third world countries, while not a single Soviet soldier has to die. And the United States had better pay heed to what Secretary of State Kissinger said recently in a press interview in Los Angeles when he contested that because we have backed out of our commitment, our responsibility in Angola, he said we may find out we're going to have to pay an infinitely higher price somewhere else later on. That may be true. In order to keep abreast of what is going on in world affairs, in the broad overview of what is happening in this world and what is going to happen in the future, you need your name on a mailing list of The Plain Truth.
Plain Truth. Plain Truth. Plain Truth. The international publication of understanding. Information you need in today's changing society. Reports on meetings with national leaders. Correspondents in all quarters of the globe report on current trends. Plain Truth. The journal you should read. Garner Ted Armstrong's analysis of important national and global issues. Read Plain Truth every 2 weeks at no cost to you. For your free subscription, call 800-423-4444. 800-423-4444. Toll free, that's 800-423-4444. Plain Truth.
Dial right now the toll-free number 800-423-4444 for your free copy of The Plain Truth. If you live in Alaska, California, or Hawaii, the number is area 213, and the number is 577-5225. I hope you'll write for it, or better yet, call right away. The operators are waiting to take your call for The Plain Truth. Well, the test of a nation is not the test of its GNP. It is not the test of its outflow of goods or its balance of payments or even its military strength or its nuclear arsenal. It is, after all, the test of its will, the test of its resolve, and the test of its character. If the United States is experiencing a character drain, then the United States is having the severest crisis, especially the crisis of identity, in all of its entire history. I want to quote to you from an article that was very, very important that occurred in a recent edition of The Plain Truth by Gene Hogberg and Jeff Calkins. America's bicentennial year puts the assessment of some distinguished English journalist in sharp focus because it talks about the values upon which American civilization are built and that they are now becoming unfashionable or obsolete. The upshot is that a highly divided, fragmented society of individuals living in a kind of non-nation that no longer believes in itself or knows where it belongs in the world could be the death knell for our civilization as we know it. The continued existence of a democracy such as America's depends upon the character of the nation as a whole, not just of its leaders, who, of course, are the product of that very society. Because of this, our founding fathers fostered the concept of republican virtue, the idea that the citizenry should exercise a fair amount of restraint, self-discipline, and responsibility. No, the United States of America today is experiencing a crisis of the spirit. But where is the kind of leadership we need? Where are the Jeffersons and the Adams, the Lincolns today in the United States of America? Where are those with the kind of resolve that we read in the lives of the forefathers of this United States of America who formulated the doctrines and the documents which are the underpinnings of our entire free system and our society? We need to take a look at the leadership in this country, especially in the election year. You know, people have asked me, how would I vote? What am I? Am I a Republican or a Democrat? No, I'm neither. And am I an independent then? No, I'm not even that. Do I belong to a political party? No, I do not. Now, that's a shameful thing to say to a lot of people. Why don't you belong to this or that party? Because, I replied, if and when I can see a candidate for office in the United States of America that has the wisdom of Solomon, the patience of Job, and the love and mercy of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, I will not only vote for him, but I will campaign for him with all of the press at my disposal, with radio and television by the hundreds and hundreds of outlets, and I would work myself half to death to get such a person elected in the United States of America. But as you look at all of the hopefuls galloping back and forth here and there, up and down the length and breadth of the United States, and listen to the statements they make, and look at the stature of the men involved, and I'm talking of 20 or 30 or maybe by now 47 separate individuals, and not singling out any one, I say that somewhere, somehow, the United States of America had better find the kind of leadership that is going to meet this crisis of the spirit which we face, because it is a moral issue and a spiritual issue even more than merely a social or an international or a foreign issue that we face. Are we going to merely try to hang on to what we've got in the United States, big, fat, happy, affluent Uncle Sam, and to become sick with greed and sick with the craven desire to drown in a sea of materialism and to have our cake and eat it too, while the rest of the world is out here with these third world countries developing all the time, wanting more and more of a share of the cake that we have so enjoyed. Only 6% of the population of the world wallowing around in 50% of its wealth and making a tremendous amount of smoke and pollution while we're doing it. Or are we going to reappraise and reassess the spiritual values of this country and lead not only the United States, but the rest of the world too? You just have to ask in the final analysis, what would the world be like if there had never been a United States? And if we in the United States do not recapture the values of the work ethic, of honesty, of integrity, of loyalty, of justice, of a truly united America under God, and if we do not lead the world, then pray tell, who else will?
All literature offered on the Garner Ted Armstrong program is free upon request. Write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Canadian viewers write Box 44, Vancouver, BC. In the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, call 213-577-5225. Be sure to watch Garner Ted Armstrong again next week at this same time.